You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory. We're trying to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from Los Angeles, California, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from beautiful Bank of California Stadium. I am Andrew Wiebe, without a single solitary partner in soccer. I'm doing the David Goss, solo dolo. I don't need co-hosts, but I am going to have some guests sitting right here in this empty chair in front of this microphone, sharing some insight on Major League Soccer and the world with you on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day and through the next month and beyond. Today, Alejandro Bedoya of the Philadelphia Union stops by to chat about using his platform and what happened afterwards. You remember, he grabbed the microphone in 2019. He said his piece. Well, what then? We've got the Loons gaffer, Adrian Heath, Ian Ayer, Nashville SC executive, Darlington Nagbe on his return to Ohio, and Lawless Abubakar, one of the happiest men in Major League Soccer. So let's get right to it. Alejandro Bedoya coming right up.
In the third minute, the captain comes up with a very big goal.
Hey, Congress, do something now. End gun violence. Let's go.
10 minutes with Alejandro Bedoya of the Philadelphia Union. How's it going, man?
I'm good, man. You know, enjoying LA. It's kind of chilly for this time of year, though.
It is. I've been shivering. Let's talk something I think a lot of our listeners are interested in, and I know when it happened. You grabbed the microphone. I don't think I have to tell the story to anybody anymore, and kind of said your piece. You know, we had a great conversation on the show, and I think a lot of people did in their own homes. And that's what it's about, right, is using your platform to get people talking and considering their viewpoints and their beliefs. But I'm more interested in how you come to that decision, how you decide it's worth it, because once you open that box, you can't shut it.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, you make yourself very vulnerable, right? But I think that was just a spur-of-the-moment thing. You know, I don't score often, so I don't plan celebrations or anything. When Marco was there, you know, we planned more of the celebrations for him, but we ended up doing a couple for me. But that weekend, it was just, you know, two mass shootings again here in our country. And I just pretty much said into the mic what the sentiment that most Americans felt that weekend. Nonpartisan, you know, something that we can all get behind, that we can all agree on, that we need to try to curb this gun violence issue. I don't even think about it, you know, it just happened. But when it did happen, you know, I still recall the police officer, security guard in the Audi field in DC, just coming over to me, yelling my name, "Hey, Bedoya, you know, thanks for what you said. It means a lot. And by the way, you've gone viral." And that was the first time.
That's in the game or
that's
after
right
the game?
Right after the game finished.
Wow.
I'm walking off the field and he says that, you know.
This guy's plugged in.
He's an officer. I mean, he checks his phone, in between, you know, the game gets boring. I mean, we were winning like 4, I forget, by some goal. So maybe he had time to look at his phone. But at that moment, I knew that, okay, this, you know, yeah, the mic is on. They heard it in the broadcast, you know, because, you know, most of the time, I didn't even know if that mic was on or the 5-second delay, you know, mm-hmm. they could have
hit the mute button or whatever it might be.
Yeah, whatever. So, I've always been a person, if you follow me, that has voiced my concerns, my opinions, you know. I think that's the beauty of this country, you know, that many others don't have, the freedom of expression. And that's something that I feel is important. And to each their own, you know, nobody should be forced to give their opinion. Some are not comfortable doing it. And that's fine, but that's just not how I was raised. That's not how I am as a person. And, you know, I've always said this a few times, but before I'm a professional athlete, a professional soccer player, I'm a human being. I'm a father now. I'm a husband. I'm a member of my community, my local community, the local church, the local school, you know, board and all this stuff. So all this stuff affects me, you know.
Are you on the school board?
No.
Like the
parent teachers. It's just things that you know, that's just like I said, I shared a sentiment that most people that weekend can attest to, and emotionally we're feeling. I think it's those things are tragic, and obviously the Parkland shooting hit really close to home. Mm-hmm. That's where I grew up. I played at that field many times. I've been to that school. A teammate of mine at the Union, I lost one of his best friends in the shooting. So after that, I felt more like engaged to be that you know, to let my voice heard about this mm-hmm. issue, because it's something I feel very strongly about. As a first world country, as great as this country is, we have a gun violence problem. And I think it's something that we need to tackle, you know, that we can all get behind, because, you know, it's come to a point, I said it after the DC game, where in our society now, going around, I know for a fact I'm not the only person who is always looking over my shoulder now mm-hmm. or thinking of an exit strategy or thinking of...
Or wondering.
Or just wondering what yeah. happens. I drop my kid off after school yeah. before I go to training every day. I drop him off and just like, okay, you know, that's the same place where he stays all day, you know, that's been on lockdown a couple of times already. So it's like when you get that message, like, oh, your heart starts beating, your mind starts racing. It's, yeah, that's, you know, we talk about freedom, you know, I don't want to live like that.
Yeah.
When I'm worried all the time.
What did you experience in the aftermath? How was sort of the trickle down afterwards? Because you have the immediate sort of reactions and social media viral. It's, you know, a buzz. What then, and maybe after you let the dust settle, how has it interjected itself into your life?
I think with something like that, like I said, you make yourself vulnerable, you know. But I think that's also a good thing. It's courageous, but it's also something that I enjoy. I think... I would say 95% was even maybe probably more positive, good messages, you know, in our current state, you know, in the country where it's so divisive and the rhetoric has been very bad. I think for the most part, people rallied behind that. You know, it was very touching to get messages from mm-hmm. survivors, you know, victims of these types of things, and say that, you know, they still suffer from anxiety, but they were happy that I was able to get a message out, that they felt their voices had been heard, you know. So... that's incredible, you know. And ever since then, you know, after it calmed down a bit, you know, it was, I thought it was great to get messages, emails, and even emails to my PR people from representatives of both sides of the aisle, because that's what it's all about, of them, you know, giving me compliments about what I did and trying to work together to, like, let's see what we can do, you know,
mm-hmm.
on a local.
And change comes from collaboration. It's not going to be
of course.
One-track pony here.
Of course, absolutely. And as well as... now being part of Every Town, which is a great organization that's trying to combat, you know, gun violence and doing things to, you know, help, you know, schools out, communities, states, and, you know, just feel safer around our country. Moms Demand is also another one, you know.
Yeah.
So out of that has come, you know, I guess some more little activism, but it's things that are, to me, have become now important and important for our society.
I can't speak for myself. I stand with you. I want to talk soccer too, though. We don't have that much time. So the union with a massive, massive step forward. And when you signed, this is what you said you wanted to bring to this club, help bring. What was last year like for you, knowing that some of those goals, some of those things that you and the club have been working for came to fruition in a way, and now looking toward the future and trying to build on it?
Yeah, it was, you know, when I came, I think that's what kind of persuaded me to choose Philly over the other ones, although I didn't have much of an option, but was the ambitious project they had. They said, right now we've got an academy, a guy that's, you know, Richie Graham, who's invested in the academy, and the setup there is amazing, but we need, you know, a veteran leadership with experience that can help us get over that hump. They never won a playoff game yet, and they were kind of... you know, stuck there in kind of mediocrity, so to speak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember following from abroad, and even old teammates and people would say Philly was kind of an easy win or whatever it was, mm-hmm. you know, when they came.
They were in disarray at times.
Yeah. So it was just about establishing myself, and you know, I feel like me as a person, player that I am, I bring that kind of that Philly spirit, that Philly attitude, you know, the blue collar, hardworking kind of guy. But also, you know, I consider myself very tactically astute and a student of the game. But so you mix that with the youth and their drive and things, and you get good results. Jim, the coaching staff, has done a great job maximizing what we've got, you know. We don't have the resources or the budget as other clubs. So the only way we can compete is by, you know, following a proper game plan, executing that, and at the same time playing an attractive style of soccer. I think we do it the right way. And, you know, ever since I've been here gradually, I think we've seen improvements all every season.
Where's it go this year? Jamiro Montero, you got to be jacked about the fact that they got that deal done.
Yeah, that was great. That was good that he got him. You know, I think you have to reward players for, you know, for the success of your club. They're the reason, guys like him are the reasons why we had such a great year. So that's good that they got him signed. But I still think we need a couple more reinforcements, you know, if we're going to have a better season than last year. because we did lose some key players, you know, some starters, and it's going to take some, you know, obviously hopefully the new guys will bring something and step up, but we also need, I think, a couple more maybe veterans, so to speak.
All right. 2020, Philadelphia Union, Alejandro Bedoya. Thanks for chatting, man.
Thank you, man.
So many people doubted this team. They said it wouldn't happen. They said it was impossible. They were wrong. And cue unbridled internal joy for Minnesota United. The postseason beckons for them.
10 minutes with the gaffer. Adrian Heath, welcome to MLS.com. Nah, I'm just messing with you, man. We had a good time last year, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, yeah. We got a little bit of banter going backwards and forwards, yeah. But it was all in good taste.
It was.
There was no malice. There.
Now, we didn't bring our flag, but I want you to know, had we done that, it would not be flying at half-mast. It would be flying full, loons to the playoffs, loons in 2020. How do you keep the momentum rolling?
Well, that's the secret. What are we going to do? You know, we've had a good year. Made the playoffs, should have beat the Galaxy. I know it could have, should have. Got to the Open Cup final. I think, I feel really disappointed at this moment still that I thought with the game was there for us to be won. So we got to go better now. We got to move on. We got to bring new players in. We got to move this thing forward. You know, I've just signed a new contract at the club. I'm excited about that. Got a DP signing, hopefully around the corner. So things are going well. But we can't stand still because the league is not allowing you to stand still. You look at the amount of money been spent this offseason with some of the clubs. It's going to be tough.
I heard the word DP signing there. Can you give us any insight on what type of player that might be? What are the sort of reinforcements that this team needs? Because it has been a quiet offseason. You got Tyler Miller in now to kind of solidify that goalkeeper spot. What does this team need? James Musa just signed too.
Yeah, but we need a couple of tacky pieces. We've lost Owen Quintero. You know, he's gone to Houston. He's did great for us in that the 18 months he's been with us. But we felt we need to get a little bit younger and, you know, invest elsewhere. So it'll be an attacking player. We're hopefully going to announce a DP signing in the next few days.
How has this league changed since you started with Orlando City? Because the, you know, Kyle Larin is your first draft pick. He's amazing. Those types of players don't come out often, and now it's Liga MX, millions of dollars. Yeah. You want to compete, you better dip into the wallet.
I think the most important thing is that you stick to your plan. What are you about? We're not going to spend $9 million, $10 million. We know that. But what we can do is build a really good group, a culture, an environment that players want to come and be part of. That's what we're trying to do. We have when I look back where we were to where we are now, we've got great training facilities. We've got arguably the best stadium in the country. Incredible atmosphere. We have all the building blocks in place now. Now we just have to keep adding them, getting better each day, each week, each month to make it better. And we all do. We're trying to do.
What kind of attacking players do you think work in this league?
Game changers. You know, we're at the Bank of California. You look at their front three, Carlos Vela, Rodriguez, and, you know, I look at what the amount of money that's been spent in attacking players, you know, somewhere along the line, we're going to have to address that by spending more on defenders because everybody's putting the money at the front end of the pitch because it's the most important part. You know, we had a really good defensive record last year. We had the best goalkeeper in the league. You know, we had the defender of the year in Icapara. We have to keep building on that and then slowly working on what we're trying to do up front.
I think last year we did, and maybe it was 2 years ago, Adrian Heath forward whisperer, just talking to you about center forwards, what it is that make them successful.
Mm-hmm.
What is it in this league that you look for? As you go look for your DP and your game changers, as you say, what are the little attributes? What are the things you say, okay, this is the difference?
Good movement, understanding of the game. I look at Robbie Keane, who for me is still one of the best DPs has been in the league. Great movement, always in the right spot. And when people talk about being an athlete and, oh, he's really quick, it's okay being quick, but if you don't know when to be there or how to get there, then it's a difference. You know, I look at Carlos Vela, you know, looking at Chicharito maybe coming into the Galaxy. I guarantee you now before he steps, he will score 20 goals next year because he's smart. He knows where to be at the right time, and that's why they go for the most money. You know, score a goal, make a goal, they are always the most expensive players because it's the hardest thing in football to do.
How did Icapara change your team?
Came in, experienced, held everybody accountable. People think Ike's a really quiet guy, and he is as an outside guy. But in the locker room, holds everybody accountable to what the principles of what we're trying to do. You know, I can't speak highly enough, Ike. He was fantastic for us last year. And I got told by a big agent in America that never underestimate the American player who understands the game. It was the best bit of advice I got. And Ike was perfect for that, along with Ozzie Alonso. We have Vito. And then we've got, you know, Michael Boxall had a stellar year. And all. We had the best right back in the league and Romain Metener. We've got some good pieces. Now we just need to keep adding to that to make it better.
Hassani, like Tim, Chase Gasper had a nice season for you as well. What is it about American players? Do we not? Why don't they get the appreciation maybe that they deserve?
No, they don't. And it's maybe because they've gone through college and they haven't been with clubs all the way through. But, you know, I look at Mason Toy, draft pick. Asani Dotson, you know, these are top proper players, and we took them out of the draft. We have to keep adding them. We hope we've got another one, and the guys we just drafted. But no, the American player in this league should never be underestimated.
You have security in the past, Orlando. It didn't work the way that you would have liked to. You've talked about the 3-year plan in Minnesota. What does security give you as a coach? How do you feel to sign that new contract and know, okay, all the sort of uncertainty that might come with this profession is at least pushed off a little ways?
Yeah, firstly, I'm delighted to sign the contract. I'm really happy where I am on and off the field. I love being in Minnesota. But the most important thing is, and most coaches who you're going to speak to over the next few days will go, you just need time. You need time to implement a plan and to get it and see it through. I have a chance now in the next 2 years. We have to move this from where we are now another couple of notches. And if I do my job properly, we can build a proper club that can compete with anybody in MLS.
When you go to Dr. Bill McGuire and you say, this is my plan, I need this time, give me that sort of layman's terms, quick, you know, in a minute. What is that plan? Where are you going? What is this club going to be?
Well, if you are not going to go and say, there's $10 million for a striker, $8 million for a winger, for a number 10. Everybody's different. Our plan has to be to incrementally get better all the time, which we've done. Now we've got to go these next 2 years. We have to go again. We have to build people that want to be part of what we're trying to build on and off the field.
So 2020, what are you trying to build? What is that? Give me some meat here.
We need to build on what we did last year. It's going to be tough. You know, the last game of the season we were in Seattle, we could finish second in the West. We should have won the Open Cup. That's going to be tough. I'd take that now if somebody said, you're going to get to the Open Cup final and you're going to finish second or third in the West. But we, as a club, we can't be driven by that. We have to be driven of, what do we do? What's the plan? Are we getting better? Yes, we are. Are we getting better on and off the field? That has to be my job is to make us better all the time.
Take me on the field. How do you get better? What are the, you know, I know sometimes the tactical side of the game, fans really want details. They want to really understand.
We need to be... We were really, really good at home last year. One defeat against Philly, which was arguably our best performance of the year. We have to be better on the road. We have to be more consistent. We have to be more accountable on the road. And we had too many games where after 20 minutes, I thought, this game's done. We can't be that. We have to get that better.
Is that mentality?
Yes. It is.
And how do you train mentality?
Well, you don't, but it's every single day trying to make sure that people are accountable to what the plan is. And that's, you know, we've made a few moves in the offseason. We think this is going to help us. We're going to be more competitive. But no, every game, bringing it every game, that's got to be the motto.
A huge season for Minnesota. Getting to the playoffs, changing things, almost getting a title. I have to get a signature from you.
The Gaffer,
Adrian, yeah, we've got the army of gnomes that sit on our table.
Look a bit sterny.
Yeah, it's, you know, you've got times where you look that way. You got times you got joy on your face.
That probably was the first year, no?
That would be the first year. What are your memories of that first year now?
It's funny because I spoke earlier on one of the radio stations and we got 10 wins that first year. People forget that. Mm. And that I still think that's my best achievement since I've been at Minnesota, to get 10 wins with the group of players, with all the off-field. People don't realize, we didn't even get on grass that year till the end of May.
Yeah, I remember looking at your training facility in preseason, and there were holes in the ground where they were putting in the pipes.
Yeah, we were, you know, we had an awful lot to deal with that year, and it's the staff, people on the in the front office, everybody put together an unbelievable year. But hey, we moved on. Got great training. Got no excuses now. We've got no excuses now. Great stadium, great training ground. Let's move it on.
They say I have to let you go, but I have to ask one more question. Uh-huh. You're one of the most entertaining coaches in the league on the sideline and after the game and your post-game availability. What's going through you during games? There is something pumping, man. You got the red blood is just, it's firing.
Yeah, I played like that, and I want my players to play like that. You know, I always say to the players that we the only thing that we can't guarantee is that can't guarantee we can win. What we can guarantee is nobody can outrun us, nobody can outfight us, and we're trying to hold them accountable to that. And if we're not getting it, then I think it's my job to make sure they know.
All right, looking forward to some banter this year, Adrian. Good luck.
Good to see you. Good to see you, mate.
Nashville will be Major League Soccer's 24th team, and I want to invite John.
10 minutes with Ian Air, Nashville SC. How's it going? It's almost here.
It's almost here. Been pushing this thing uphill for about 18 months, and I'm chasing it down the other side now. So,
what does it feel like to see light at the end of that tunnel, that light being an actual soccer game in Major League Soccer? Because, of course, you've done your thing in USL Championship as well.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think it's couldn't come quick enough, to be honest, because we're at the point now where most things are done and you get more edgy and more sort of rattled by the weight rather than the outcome. So an awful lot of people put an awful lot of hard work in, but we're ready to go. Players are going to preseason Monday. Get them fit and let's get on with it.
How is opening day going to be a spectacle? How is it going to be different? Will that stadium be sold out? What do you expect of that first sort of hurrah for this club?
That's the plan. You know, we have big ambitions. So, you know, we think we fill that place. We think Nashville comes out for its teams. We've already shown, I think, albeit in smaller parts, you know, we know how to put on a party. We are expansion draft, our super draft. We have a big jersey launch tomorrow with a few thousand people coming out to that. It'll be a big event. It'll have all the things you'd expect of Nashville: music, you know, fanfare, excitement, some secret stuff that'll be a little bit different, a bit edgy for Nashville, that we want to do. And it'll be a big spectacle, and you know, against big opposition.
People like to, in the lead up to these expansion seasons, pick at season ticket numbers and use those as a way to sort of measure general interest. For Nashville, there has been rumblings that maybe it's not at a level of an Atlanta, or maybe it's not at a level of other clubs who've entered this league. Where are you at right now? Do you have any concern about that?
No, don't have any concern about it. We're about 70% of where we thought we'd be at this point in time. 70% of our overall. I think, you know, we always expected to go into the opening game and then probably a few months in, you know, where you'll see that conversion over of people who come try it for the first time. But we feel good. And I don't think, you know, I think it's wrong to try and define who you're going to be and what it's going to look like and how many people are going to show up that early in the process. I think opening day will be a big day for us. I think we're going to have to chip away at it. And looking at other teams in Nashville, that was the case. Predators, Titans, it's a different market. And I think it's hard in MLS, in the US, such a big country. It's hard to make those direct comparisons because the cities are all slightly different with a very different audience or demographic. And we feel good about where we'll be and where our audience will be. And it's kind of marathon, not a sprint. But opening day will be a big one.
There is no comparison between Liverpool and Nashville. Liverpool's brand is so much history. Nashville's trying to begin their history and create it. You have a different challenge than maybe you've ever had in your career or many people will ever have. As you're at this point kind of waiting for that big hurrah in the beginning, what are the things that you reflect on that you've learned that are different, that have changed with the way that you have to manage and lead and guide?
Yeah, I think, look, Liverpool, as you say, 128 years old or whatever it is now, lots of history, the super tanker of jobs, you know, where it's hard to change course or change anything, really. And here we're building it from the ground up. And so the things that were important to me were to build something, and, you know, the vision of our owner was, we want to build something that's kind of authentic, not gimmicky, not just, you know, bit over flash, because that's not Nashville either. Nashville's kind of more about being cool and understated and those types of things. And that's what we want to be. We want to be seen. You know, we want people to look at our games on TV or in person and see some of the stuff that goes on and think, yeah, that's Nashville. That's what I would expect of Nashville. That is uniquely Nashville. And so we've been very thoughtful, both in some of the stuff that will go on, but also the way we've hired people and the type of personalities we've hired, both on the technical side and on the business side, that you won't be under any illusion where you are when you see us and you come and experience one of our games. And, you know, there'll be a music piece to it because there has to be, right? I mean, it wouldn't be Nashville without it. But yeah, it'll certainly make some people sit up and raise their eyebrows, I think, some of the ideas we have.
So much money being thrown around Major League Soccer right now, at least in our sort of expectations and measurements. Nashville hasn't been a massive spender. You guys have spent money. You've gone and got veterans. Do you have any concern about success on the field this year?
No, I don't. I think looking at one of the big pieces of work I did myself before I came and took the job was doing sort of analysis of people who've spent money and success and which teams have won and what, you know, and it's certainly not the case at the upper end. There are examples both ways. There are teams that have spent relatively, you know, little compared to others and done well, and there's some who've spent a lot of money and smashed it, and there are those in between. And I think, of course, some people will have bigger budgets than we have either now or in the future sometimes, but I think it's about how you spend your money. You get to spend it once and you need to spend it wisely. So I think where people might not see us spending big on certain players, I think where we've been really smart, I think, is about how we've gone and recruited players and the systems we've put in place and the people we've put in place that really know how to get the best for your money. So I think you can only be judged by the outcome, not by the spending. You know, you look at some of the players we brought, like Randall Leal, Hani Mukhtar, you know, lots of others. People don't really know who those players are, and they certainly don't know because they haven't had that opportunity to see who they are in MLS. And I think let's judge our spending on the outcome of that rather than what the number adds up to.
All right, we'll start judging you guys into February. That's the way this works, right?
Wouldn't expect anything less.
All right, Ian Ayre, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Beautiful pass for Joseph Martinez. Julian Gressel now. Go. All the way through, big time goal. And would you look who it is for a second of the year? Darlington Nagbe.
All right, 10 minutes with Darlington Nagbe. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Ohio, man.
Yeah, let's
go. You want to be there. That's very, very clear.
Yeah.
What is it about the state, the place? What's the siren song for you?
Nothing. Just home is home. You know, I think I've been gone for a while. Portland in 7 years, Atlanta 2 years. Had a good time at both places, you know, but I just think it was right time to come home with everything going on. New ownership, you know, new management, coaching, and the GM and presidential roles. So, added some new players, me, Lucas as well, with the guys that they have now. So it's a good time.
When you think of home, mm-hmm. what do you think of? Because, like, my home is Kansas, and I'm not, you know, no offense to Kansas, but I'm not rushing to go back to Kansas.
Yeah. No, I think for me, it's just the personality. I think that's just how I am, a homebody. I'm not too tired. You know, I don't travel too much. You know, I have the family and stuff. So being able to get back home and be closer to family, my in-laws are from there, my wife's from there as well. So I think it's more so that and the opportunity to play, you know, in front of home and in front of family, I think is good.
We're going to get to soccer. Creature comforts of home, your homebody.
Yeah.
What's important to you? What do you do? I mean, I don't go out anymore either. 9:30 p.m., I'm asleep, but I wonder what your nights are like.
My nights are the same. I got three kids, so I'm not doing much either. But, you know, hopefully it's an opportunity to do much, you know, with family about out and around. Can come and help us out with the kids, you know. But on top of that, from a professional side, you know, being able to play at home and be in front of my family, I think, was a big thing for me as well.
I think, correct me if my research is wrong here, but since 2008, mm-hmm. four seasons in which you haven't been coached by mm-hmm. Caleb Porter. Couple with John Spencer, couple in Atlanta.
Four. Yeah, four seasons.
What is it about that relationship?
Mm-hmm. I mean, professionally, we win, I think, wherever we've been, so that's good. And then he just knows me, and I know him. You know, I think he knows the type of person I am. I don't need to be bothered too much, you know. And he, I think he trusts me as well to go out there and try to execute what he's trying to get the team to execute. So hopefully I can be a big help to him and the team, and you know, hopefully we can do something special again there.
I talked to Bruce Arena while I've been here about man management. What you just said kind of resonated with me. He knows who I am. He knows I don't need to be bothered.
Yeah.
Is that how people get the best out of you? Just stay out of Darlington's way, let him do his thing? Or do you need to be pushed?
I don't think I need to be pushed, you know, but if I'm pushed, it is what it is. I'm not going to tell a coach how to coach, you know. Speaking of Bruce, I love Bruce. I had Bruce with the U.S., so I had a great time when Bruce was there. He's another coach that I really enjoyed working with, too. But, Caleb and I just have a special relationship. I think knowing him since I was 16, 17, you know, and building that relationship and that trust, I think it's just natural that it happens, that we like working together.
I look at you guys' roster, and I'm already pushing the narrative. ESPN Plus team. I'm watching this team. I want to watch this team. It looks like a team that's going to be fun, that's going to have the ball, that knows what to do with it when they have it.
Mm-hmm.
When you see this roster, do you think the same thing? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the same thing. You know, being in Atlanta the last couple of years, I think those two rosters that I was part of, I think were the most talented rosters that I've played with. You know, so being able to be on a roster like that, I'm not saying that we're that in Columbus, but I think going towards that direction, I think that's the way to compete in this league. Now you have to have good players to go along with good coaching, you know, and the facilities and the stadiums and all that stuff. So Columbus is heading in the right direction.
Who's the player that gets you the most excited? You mentioned Lucas. Yeah. And he's not bad.
Yeah. You know, I haven't seen him too much. I've just seen some highlights. You know, obviously, just knowing he played at Tigres, which is a great club as well, you know. But who gets me excited? I would just say, I don't know if I can say one person. I like, Luis Diaz. You know, when we played him, he had some pace, and he was dangerous on the counter. Scored a nice goal against us. Trying to think who else. I think Offals, you know, one of the best right backs in the league. Who else? Mensa, strong, powerful back there. I mean, there's so much I can go on.
I'm going to throw out Milton Valenzuela back from injury.
Yeah, exactly. Him back from injury, you know, attacking up and down the on the wing. So, I mean, it's a good group, good group of guys, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Future of soccer in Columbus looks very bright.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's home. You wanted to be home. What do you think this can turn into?
I think a team that's, you know, making playoffs every season. I think that's the plan and goal for every player and every club. And I think right now we have the capability to do that, especially with the new format of the league and the playoffs. You know, I think once you get in, everyone has a shot, has a chance. So hopefully we can do something special.
What do you think about your future with the national team? It's this balance that you have, club and country, and everybody sort of debates what's more important. Yeah. What do you put more under? Mm-hmm. How much stress does it take?
Yeah.
How do you evaluate that balance?
Well, for me, it's always been club first. I think everyone kind of knows that. And in terms of my future, I haven't thought about it too much, to be honest. But, I just take care of club, and then anything else that happens after that, it happens, you know, good or bad.
Have you, when we talked last time, I think it was like 2 years ago, we talked a little bit about public perception. And just sitting here with you in that time as well, you don't strike me as somebody who's bothered by much, who's... Yeah. let's say on Twitter, an awful lot. No. How do you stay even keeled? Is it just personality?
Yeah, I think it's just personality. I think I just know who I am as a person and player. And as a player, I just kind of, you know, focused on it for 3-4 hours of my day, and then it's done after that, and I go home, and then I'm the person. So I just try to keep it that way. You know, when you play. Everyone tries to give their all. You know, so if you have a good game or a bad game. Especially bad games, you know. I don't think you can play too many bad games in a row. So if you have a bad game, you just let it go and focus on it, on the next games. And you're the player you are for a reason, so just keep it going like that.
Take some time for people to be that secure in who they are, especially in a profession like yours where it's very public-facing and you have a lot of people trying to tell you what you should do or what you should be.
Yeah.
Have you felt this way for a long time? Did it take you time to sort of come into yourself in that way as a man? Or has this always been the way it was?
I think I've always been like this, but it's taken me more time to understand other people's opinions, like where they got that from or where, you know, it comes from. But I would say, it takes people some time. But I think most players are aware of who they are. And I think, like I just said, I think they don't understand why people think certain things, you know. But I'm a fan of sports, too, so I want the Cavs to win a championship every year, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I get it, you know. But a lot of people aren't athletes, so I guess, or part of organized sports. So they might not get it, but,
Who are you off the field, man? You have those 3-4 hours, and you're Darlington Nagby, the soccer player.
Yeah.
You go home, you're Darlington Nagby, the husband, the father.
Yeah, husband, father. What
are
father.
You like? Are you a goofy dad? Because you're not striking me as too goofy right now, but I think you could pull the mask off, maybe.
Yeah, I'm a goofy dad. You know, I love having fun. I think that's the most important thing. And I think that's one thing that, one reason why I love being with my family and friends, just because I'm a different person when I'm with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm more laid back and relaxed, and I don't have a shield up, so I try to be in that situation as much as possible.
All right, Darlington Nagby, the soccer player, the dad, the husband, the man. Yes, thanks sir. For joining us, man.
Thank you.
Get foot off the gas and not fully concentrate. Johnny Russell over the top to Namath. Oh, and Namath gets put off by Abubakar. It is out for a corner. Good combination play from Russell and Namath, but also good last-minute defending by Lawless Abubakar.
10 minutes with Lawless Abubakar of the Colorado Rapids. What's up, man?
Not too much, man. Not too much.
How you're one of the happiest people I've seen on the field in this league. Does that surprise you?
I don't know. But
you seem like you're loving life in Colorado. Let's just put it that way.
Is this
is the right place for you? Why is that?
I think so. Because I'm really happy. Just that when I moved there on loan, the feeling that I felt when I got there, you know, the welcome from the club, from teammates, from the fans, it was amazing. So I feel like I'm already home, and from right away I wanted to stay there. Even after the loan spell, I wanted to stay there.
And you will. And you have Robin Fraser as a coach. Now, you got to the team in a time where it was a little interesting for the Rapids. The beginning of the season did not go well, but the end of the season went well.
Really well.
What was it like when you got into that locker room?
So when I got there on loan, like I said already, the guys welcomed me really well. So it motivated me to play really well and just give everything for the club, because I know they were struggling with the coach, you know, changes and stuff. So you know, I spoke with Casey as soon as I got there, and he showed me the plan and stuff. So it gave me a lot of confidence, and just went out there and do my thing. And from the support of teammate, you know, we did it together.
How did you do it? What was the change?
I think it's, you know, at the beginning of the year, they were conceding a lot of goals. So when I got there, you know, I asked myself, and I spoke with some of the guys. I said, hey, guys, look, you know, when I look at you guys, every single game looks like you guys score a goal. You guys score goals. So what we need to do is just do something to stop, you know, conceding goals. And that means we should, you know, shut the defense really well. And we work together, you know, all the back line, plus Timmy. And Timmy is amazing. You know, he led us, and we won some games.
What influence did Tim have on you? He's not there anymore, but you got about half a year with one of the legends of the game.
He had a lot of impact on me, honestly. He's one guy that I grew up watching when I was a little kid. So when I got there playing with him, and him even talking to me on the field was special, you know. And it gives me a lot of confidence, and to just play every time I look back and see him in the goal, it's just something special. And then we have Clint, which is also a very good goalie. So, I mean, I just got all the support that I needed, and you know, to give out my best every single game.
When I think about the legends in this league as center backs, central defenders, Robin Fraser is one of those guys. Multiple Defender of the Year awards. He, as a head coach for you, would feel like somebody from the outside, an ideal situation, someone who can really guide you, help you, teach you. Did you feel that once he arrived?
I felt so much like that because, you know, when I was in Columbus, when I got drafted, I had someone similar to him with Greg. You know, he always, you know, do extra stuff with me on the field. So I grew under him, and, you know, now I have another center back, former, you know, legend of the league. So I feel like even now I'm going to even grow more having Fraser with me. And, you know, we spoke already about him, you know, I would like for him to develop me more to become, you know, one of the consistent and, you know, best center back in the league. And, you know,
Greg Berhalter is who you're talking about with Columbus, and of course Robin with Colorado. I always wonder, you know, guys stayed after with me, coaches are working with me. What does that mean for you in your position in the areas that you want to grow? What are you doing when you're staying late?
Most importantly, you know, before I got drafted, I knew I had some issue with, you know, passing, playing out of the back. So it's something that I improved more, playing out of the back. So because Columbus, that was a great system, mm-hmm. and I had to do that to be able to be on the field. So it's something that every after training, I love to do with the coaches, extra all the time with Greg, you know, defending in the box, something that I had to improve more. And, you know, and little stuff that, and they always give me feedback, you know, all of them, and say, hey, Lalas, you need to improve this. So after training, sometimes I talk to them. I said, you know, I want to improve this. And they're always down for it. They're always down to help me. And I'm happy and always grateful for that.
The physical side of the game doesn't seem like something you struggle with. I'm racking my memory right now, and I think I remember you're smiling, so maybe you're thinking about it. Maybe something with one Josie Altidor, you guys got into it a little bit. Tell me the story behind that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just, you know me, I'm always physical guys, always going hard on players. So, and it's someone who also wants to, you know, get into battle. So I think we just got into each other and we just keep battling. And, you know, when in the game, I unfortunately had a early yellow card. So I think their plan was to get me have another yellow card. So anytime he gets the ball, he tried to hold it. And he wants me to just kick him and get another yellow card. But I never backed down. And, you know, at halftime, Robin spoke to me to, you know, be careful because I had a yellow card. So I play really smart in the game. And, you know, I mean, it's just battle, you know, every time we just on the field, we just go at each other, yeah.
Who's the guy that you like to battle with the most? I mean, Josie's...
He's big,
yeah. He's big. He's got some... He can mix it up. Who's the guy that you enjoy when you know you're going to play this guy? Okay, we're going to have some battles.
I mean, we have top strikers in the league. And, you know, sometimes it depends on the striker I'm playing against. Some of the strikers, they don't really want to get into battle.
Yeah.
But some of them love it. So...
Who loves it? Who can you tell loves it?
I mean, Ibra loves it. Yeah. You know, Ibrahimovic loves it. Josie Altidor obviously loves it. So, you know, we got Rodriguez from Minnesota. We had good battle with him also. So, I mean, all these big forwards, you know, JC Sapon, you know, Kai Kamara before he was my teammate, you know, I love to go against them, all of them. So, I mean, it really, like I said, it really depends on the forward. So, like, when I play against VA, he doesn't want
to
go. No,
he wants to get in the channels,
so,
and he wants to make you run.
He wants to be a nice guy, so it doesn't really give me, you know, like that confidence to go into battle, just steady and play. So,
before I let you go, 2020 with the Rapids, you were one of my favorite teams to watch over the back half of last year. What can this team accomplish? A new designated player, new signings, a new center back in Austin Trusty next to you. What's on tap for the Rapids this year?
I mean, I feel like, you know, we still have the underdog mentality. You know, we're young. We have a lot of energy. We have a very good coach who's going to lead us and who's going to improve us. So we are ready and we're going to play together. And I think you've already seen it last season, and we play for each other and we're going to keep doing that, and hopefully big things happen.
Good luck, Lawless. Keep smiling, man. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. That's it from me. That's it from our guests. We've got plenty more coming over the next couple weeks. We'll be back on Thursday, everybody. Enjoy your week.